Hey, my name is Petra Cruz, and I'm obsessed with all things birth, but especially VBAC. I am a birth doula and mom who had a vaginal birth after 3 cesareans. In this podcast, we dive deep into the inspirational world of vaginal birth after cesarean. In each episode, you'll hear inspiring VBAC stories, practical tips from professionals who've championed the VBAC cause, as well as my personal journey and how it might help you on yours. From mindset shifts to evidence-based practices, you'll leave each episode feeling inspired and informed. Get ready to soak in the wisdom, embrace the strength within, and join this incredible VBAC community. This is the VBAC Junkie Podcast. Hi, and welcome back. So today I had the pleasure of talking to Dr. Elizabeth, who is a Webster Plus perinatal certified chiropractor working at the intersection of clinical practice, social justice, and somatics. She is so passionate about holistic perinatal education and care for all people. Dr. Elizabeth practices in Ventura and Santa Barbara, California, as well as virtually. This conversation is so amazing, and I highly suggest that you listen because she has such a different view about cesareans and how she works with her VBAC clients. She does so many things that are different when she works with her clients, and she's going to give you some tips on how you can prepare for your VBAC in a way that is a whole body experience, which I love. All right, without further ado, let's dive into this episode. You are going to get to hear all about what she does, and I would love to know, how did you get started in this profession to begin with?
Yeah, so how I got into chiropractic, I'll start with quickly first, and then how I got into perinatals. So I was going to go to law school, and I have a really rare eye disease I was diagnosed with as a child and had over 30 eye surgeries. And so right after I finished undergrad, I had my 30th surgery. It didn't go well. And so I couldn't open my eyes. I was in a lot of pain. And I went to massage school for a year, just kind of waiting for my eyes to recover. And a couple weeks in, I decided I wanted to be a chiropractor. And I went back and took all my science classes. So losing my eyesight is actually what guided me to chiropractic, where I can use my hands and my heart and my third eye intuition. So throughout chiropractic school, I had an interest in pediatrics and perinatal. We had to take those classes as part of our core curriculum. And right when I graduated, I did the Webster certification, which is our prenatal. It's kind of like our premier prenatal technique. And it's really an analysis of the sacrum, that sacred bone at the bottom of your spine. That's a big flat bone. And we don't turn babies with Webster, but we do balance the pelvis and have the sacrum move so the baby, with its own agency and as an autonomous being, can turn head down if it's safe. So I did that training, and the day the piece of paper for the actual certificate came in the mail, I was early in practice. This woman comes in, third pregnancy, she'd had twins and a singleton already, and she was trying to have a home birth. And her baby was breech and did the Webster technique. And after one time, and that doesn't always happen, but it was amazing, the baby went head down and she had him a few days later at home, and he was over 10 pounds. So I was like, wow, this is an amazing technique. And so I kept honing my skills with that and just kind of doing general chiropractic, but more and more I was starting to get pregnant patients or postpartum patients and seeing their babies. So when I went back to grad school for the second time and I was working through the master's into the PhD program, you have to find a gap in the literature. And I was studying depth psychology and somatics at Pacifica Graduate Institute. And I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, but I started to notice that with these new patients that were coming to me who were postpartum, who had unplanned cesarean birth, that they weren't touching their scar. And they were afraid of it. They were ashamed of it. They wouldn't engage with maybe that area of their body or below the incision site. They weren't producing milk. And so I was really curious, like, what's going on here? So from this Jungian depth psychological perspective, I got really curious, and I wasn't finding much in the literature. And I was thinking, is there some sort of dismemberment happening during this unplanned, unwanted, maybe unnecessary belly birth? And I just wasn't sure. And so my dissertation work on cesarean birth ended up being the cornerstone of that intersectionality of depth psychology and somatics as it pertains to cesarean birth. So I was the first one to write about that, and I got published in 2022. So it really came out of my practice of what I was noticing that pushed me forward, and I ended up becoming a pre and perinatal educator through APA, as well as a somatic movement therapist, and I'm a 500-hour yoga teacher. So all of it really comes together, and I just keep taking more and more trainings because of what shows up in my practice every single day.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I'm just like, I'm here with like my mouth open because I'm just so in awe of everything that you just said. And there's so many amazing things that you touched on. Like, first, I would love to start with telling our audience, like, okay, you already touched on it, what exactly you do, the Webster certified part of it. So what can we give them, like, a clear difference on what it means to get a Webster certified chiropractor to work on you compared to somebody who is not?
Yes. So Webster certification is a class you take outside of school. It's not part of the core curriculum at any of the 17 chiropractic schools in the U.S. And it's really giving an analysis of that sacrum that I was talking about. And I love the sacrum because it's named that because it's sacred and embryology, that's where the nervous system begins and grows upward toward the brain. So it's a really special area. And we want to make sure that that's moving. So going to a Webster certified chiropractor is really important throughout the perinatal continuum. And I'm talking from preconception through prenatal into the postpartum period, so that entire continuum, because of the advanced training in that technique specifically. And that's going to be different than Webster plus perinatal certified. So the perinatal certification came out through our International Chiropractic Pediatric Association, ICPA, a couple of years ago. I did it right when it came out. And it's another, I think, 9 or 10 courses. Each one has all these exams. So it took me some time to make my way through it, but that's a really advanced training. So the Webster is typically a weekend. There's a hands-on test. There's also a written test. So there's rigor in it, but the perinatal is even more advanced. And we get into preconception, nutrition, different ways of analyzing the body, different technique systems, as well as some of the mental health components and beyond. So that's an even better, so we don't have as many people that are perinatal certified yet, but you want to go to the ICPA, International Chiropractic Pediatric Association, and there's a really good find a doctor function, and you can search by zip code, and you're going to see a couple things. You might see Webster certified, so that's great for especially prenatal. You may see Webster plus perinatal certified, and then there's a couple other letters. There's CACCP or DACCP. This is going to pertain to pediatrics. So either certified, which takes a couple years typically, or a diplomate of pediatrics, which is the highest level. That's like 3 years post-grad work in pediatrics. So those are all the certifications you'll see through the ICPA. And we have to uphold that through continuing education credits through that organization every 2 years as well to keep up on our training and the latest research.
Oh my gosh, that is so good to know. And I cannot wait for people to like find this because I get asked that so much too. Like, where can I find a Webster certified, you know, chiropractor, but plus the perinatal certification? That sounds like it's going to be so much more, even like better, because then you're looking at the body as a whole. You're not just looking at it at this one, like, I feel like it's like a specialty, but you know, looking at the body as a whole, I feel like is the most important way to look at the body. So that is incredible.
Bringing in the nutrition and the mental health components and, you know, the mother baby dyad or the family unit as a collective nervous system, all of that really vitally important to address as the doctor.
That is so beautiful. I love that so much. Thank you for that. I'm definitely going to share that with everybody now.
By the way, I really respect the organization. So I just want to have that disclaimer.
Yeah, absolutely. So also you touched on something that feels really near and dear to my heart. It really speaks to what I used to feel because you talked about how women don't like want their scar when they do have like an unwanted, unplanned, or just, unexpected cesarean happen. They don't want their scar to be touched anywhere around it. They have negative feelings towards it because I had that. I used to not touch my scar because it like triggered a trauma response in me to where it brought me back to my traumatic cesarean experiences. And I think that's something that's so important to talk about because, I mean, there's so many things that can happen with the scar. It can hinder your posture. It can create internal issues that we can't see. There can be adhesions that are pulling on different things that shouldn't. And I think talking about how, there is that association with the scar and how we can kind of move past that. So you created or did this research paper. So what did you find in that research paper when you did that research for that paper?
I found a lot. And I mean, starting with the history of obstetrics and gynecology, which I didn't know ahead of time. So my dissertation was 401 pages. So I went really deep into this topic. And I had a few main findings. And I want to say that everybody I interviewed had had an unplanned cesarean birth. And I interviewed 9 people. I had like between 2011, 2021, all these parameters set and like high ethical rigor for the dissertation research. But I had 4 main findings and it boiled down to birth plan and choice. And that kind of was like, I had a birth plan and C-section was not part of it. And then the next one I called the liminal space. And that was a really scary place for a lot of people when they were being wheeled across that threshold into the OR. And being in the operating theater, often separated from a partner, shaking, convulsing, not being told that that was a normal reaction to some of the medications in the spinal block. And so being in that liminal space, that's a really scary place to be because birth work is death work, it's grief work, it's all of that. So you're in these two worlds at that time and you're really scared. So that's the liminal space. The third area that I found was on obstetric racism and obstetric violence, and just going into the historical implications of obstetric racism, that really gynecology was built upon, and how it plays a huge role in our healthcare system, especially in the United States today. And then finally, my fourth finding I called On the Verge of Vaginal Delivery. And I interviewed multiple people who were at 9 or 10 centimeters dilation. One of them had 3 rounds of pushing, was laboring down in between. And something happened with that cascade of intervention, and they still ended up in a C-section. And that was really hard for them. So looking at all these things from a somatic, which is the lived experience of the body, the depth psychology, which is coming from our unconscious and the body, as well as vitalistic, which is where I come from in chiropractic, of that everything is connected, holistic perspective. So those were my 4 main findings.
Wow. So 400 over 400 pages. That's got to be a lot of information. So if somebody wants to like read your dissertation, is that possible?
I can provide you a link to it where they can purchase it.
Okay.
For your show notes, I can send that along. Absolutely. I've sent it out to some people and I'm like, here's your light reading. But it's definitely, I'm so proud of it still. When I hold the actual book, just the somatic experience I have of holding the book of like, I birthed this into the world is really potent for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, is there like a broad, like if somebody was like, what am I going to get out of reading this dissertation? What would you tell them?
A lot of people are really intrigued by the history of obstetrics and gynecology because we're not taught that. And we can go into that if that is in our flow in the future here during the interview. But also just the findings I just went over. Those are findings I use every day in my clinical practice of helping people prepare. When I have an inkling, maybe they'll end up in a belly birth, or if it's, it's leaning that way, whatever the it might be, just being like, you know, I want to talk to you about how you may have this reaction to the medication, and you might be really cold and shaking and convulsing, and they might not tell you that that is a normal reaction. So I just want you to know that, so you're not scared. And my patients are always like, thank you. And it really helps them just be prepared. I think for me, I tell my practice members every day, consent is ongoing, you're dynamic. And so consent can change at any time for any reason or for no reason at all. So because of what happens often in hospital settings, where there's a cascade of intervention, they don't always get that. So I try to provide that. So that's a lot of what's in my research of how can we create consent and understanding and a birth vision versus a birth plan, which can make us feel constricted, but an overall birth vision that includes maybe even preconception if you, you know, think that far in advance, but definitely that fourth trimester, that postpartum period as well, so that it can be more comprehensive. So I think those are some of the gems from my research.
Yeah, and that is beautiful. And that is a lot of things that I try to focus on, because there's so much focus on like just like the actual labor and birth itself that like people forget about like everything else, because there's so much leading up to it. And then there's so much afterwards, like postpartum lasts so much longer than the labor, than the birth. So yeah, preparing that. And I think that's so incredible that you do that. And is this something that is taught to you through your chiropractic, or is this just something you started on your own?
This is more so just from everything I've gathered from all the trainings I've done over the years that I've put together into my own practice. And I don't think I know that much. I refer out all the time. I work really closely with a pelvic floor PT who's a good friend of mine, but I'm constantly reaching out, and almost all my friends are perinatal providers of some sort. And we all kind of understand each other's weird schedules. And I'm always like talking to midwives and doulas and OTs, PTs, whatever it may be, and collecting information. Even like when we were talking earlier about like the incision, and I teach my patients, like, we're going to start feeling around that incision once it's, you know, it's okay to do so. And we're going to use different textures, but then I want you to go to acupuncture. Maybe get some gentle cupping, and then you maybe even some cold laser treatments needed from a PT at some point. The class 4 lasers can be helpful for that, for bringing sensation back. But I want to help them start engaging with that area to honor it, because that's where your baby came from. And something that came up for me, and I wrote about it in the introduction part of my research, was my mom, all me and my sisters, my two sisters, were all born via cesarean. And my mom died from breast cancer when I was 14, so I couldn't talk to her about this. But I remember her saying, all birth is natural. And so she's like, it would just not be natural if the baby came out of my nose or a different area. And so then that was part of what I was curious about too, of like, where did this shame come from? And so that played a part in my research too, because I came into the world through cesarean birth. So wanted to name that.
Yeah, no, I love that. And you know, you hit a nerve right there with like the shame, because there is so much shame surrounding cesarean. I know I felt it. I felt shame. I felt guilt. I felt like I was broken because I didn't play an active role in the birth of 3 of my 4 children. So I felt like, what is wrong with me? And you know, now it took me like 16 years before I was able to start healing and stop feeling shame from that first cesarean that I had. It's such a process to go through. And now I can confidently say, I don't feel shame. I don't feel guilt because I gave birth. I still grew a whole entire human. And, you know, they came out of my body, and then I still took care of that human and still continue to care for those humans. You know, that's a huge accomplishment.
Especially, I mean, you're having major abdominal surgery. That's so much for your body to go through. And then on top of that, to have to take care of another human and to get to know them earth side. But there is so much of that kind of shame. And that's something I wrote about a lot too, where our society and culture is like, oh, you have this healthy baby with 10 fingers and 10 toes, just get over it. Whereas culture, like throughout antiquity and most cultures, and what the research shows is sharing and telling your birth story is really helpful to making meaning of it so that you don't have to hold the trauma in your body, in your soma. And each time you share part of that, maybe through writing or drawing or in a circle with other women, it's really, really powerful for your healing process. So I think it's really important we're talking about this now to shed some light on that.
Absolutely. And that is one thing that I did when I was on this healing journey is I wrote about my birth stories, each one. And that helped me to outwardly process and, just get this negative weight that was self-inflicted, off of me so that I could feel like I did accomplish something. I did something amazing. Because you're right, society is like so focused on natural birth, unmedicated birth, birth at home, which I'm not saying none of those are okay or the right, or if it's for you, it's the right thing. If that's something that is calling to you, it is the right thing. If you want to have a scheduled cesarean, that is the right thing. It's so individual and there's no quote unquote right or wrong way to do it. Whatever you decide, that is the right thing to do. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I agree. And finding a provider and, creating your birth team that's trauma informed, that's going to recognize that is also part of that too. So interviewing different providers, because it's you are autonomous and have that agency. And so I agree with that because one method isn't right for every single person. So finding trauma informed people that are going to honor and respect you is so important to the process as well.
Absolutely. And so, obviously the premise here is we're talking about VBAC and cesarean. So if somebody is, wanting, planning a vaginal birth after cesarean, is there any like tips or anything that you suggest that they do to, kind of help them along this journey besides what we've already talked about?
Yeah, so what I do, I have a patient right now who's 37 weeks, first two were C-sections, and she is trying for a VBAC at home. And what we've been doing is she's been getting adjusted every week. I've been doing the Webster technique. I also use the sacral occipital technique wedges and unwind her pelvis. And I've been giving her stretches along with spinning babies exercises. And then I had her meet with a pelvic floor PT and do some birth prep because she'd never pushed before. So they worked on that. Her partner was there and he was part of it because he'd never witnessed a vaginal birth with his wife either. So that those kind of scenarios I think are really important to practice and to also have a conversation ahead of time around the shame to process the best you can your previous birthing experiences so we don't bring that into this one and all that if there's trauma associated with it. I really encourage my practice members, especially the first baby, but really any pregnant person, I'm like, I need you to have a doula and I need you to be in therapy. And so that's kind of, those are some of my go-tos with anyone. But with VBAC specific, definitely some prep with a PT, the pelvic floor PT, I think is really important. Acupuncture, helping the nervous system be in a nice parasympathetic state. And I like to talk with their doulas, their midwives, their OB, just so we're all on board. Sometimes I'll go and I'll be with them while they're in labor, even, and provide some additional support. So making sure the whole team is on board. And I like to, and that's a lot of it's checking in with their mindset as well, because the research shows that if you're wavering, it's probably going to go in that direction. So we want to be really clear, but also with being in relationship with our expectations. So it's a fine line. And I just moved from a town where VBAC wasn't allowed. It was banned for about 20 years and it just started happening again in Santa Barbara. So it's a big conversation in this area.
Absolutely. And I think that's great that you talked about mindset because It is so much about mindset, so much more than like I even realized, because when I was planning for my vaginal birth after three cesareans, there was so much fear instilled into me, so much negativity surrounding it, because there's no solid research surrounding a vaginal birth after three cesareans and the actual risks compared to benefits. So I had all of that on top of my mind. And so I had to do so much inner work to process that and realize what are the actual benefits and risks of a vaginal birth compared to a cesarean birth. And just, being okay with that and really like focusing on imagining what could help you be successful, because our minds, I don't think we realize the power our minds have. Like, if we're imagining that that worst case scenario is happening, our body doesn't know any different. So we are going to manifest that, I feel like, into happening. So in the opposite way, if we're envisioning, this VBAC happening, what it's going to look like, what it's going to feel like, what it's going to smell like I said, our minds or our bodies don't know any different. So if we feel that happening, our body's like, this is already happening, So just like putting so much emphasis, and I'm not just saying like, oh, we'll be positive and everything will happen the way we imagine, like there's actual work that goes into it. And not to say it's like you got to do hours and hours and hours a day, but just like 5 minutes of like, I don't know, some meditation, or just like focusing on your inner, like your mind, and thinking about everything, because we can get so caught up in like the daily hustle and bustle of the day that we don't even think about it.
Those few mindful moments of connecting with your baby. I'll have my patients, I'm like, let's put one hand on your heart and one on your belly and connect with your baby and let them know that they're safe and they're loved and they're wanted. And from that perinatal psychology standpoint, that makes a big difference because they feel that. And so that's a big part of the practice I instill within my practice.
I love that so much. I've never heard of anybody that does chiropractic that goes so in depth as you do. And I think that's beautiful, because we need that. We need like this village of support to come with us, stand alongside us on this journey that is not like an easy journey by any means. It takes time, it takes support, it takes being and feeling loved, and just all the things, and being able to feel safe in giving consent, and knowing that it's okay if you change your mind along the way when you were so stuck on this one thing. It's okay to evolve and want something differently later on.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And to your point a moment ago too, with trauma and you were leading toward timelines. One example I give for people, I've been through all these eye surgeries and some were awake. I was having my doing like an organic lash tint and lift last year, and my eye was temporarily glued shut. And I threw the 12-pound weighted blanket off my body and was honestly freaking out. And luckily, the person, my esthetician, is also in the perinatal psychology world and was like, you're here in this moment. But my brain didn't know if I was five or, here in my late 30s, and that I was safe because trauma doesn't know that. So that's why I really encourage work with a therapist, maybe even a somatic-based therapist who's going to help you where you're holding that tension and that trauma in your body ahead of time so that those things don't come up, because often we're in this vulnerable state that will come up during birth and that can slow the birth process down. So I think it's really important that it's not like we're going to work through a lifetime of trauma in 9 months, but moving through some of that, coming into relationship with it ahead of time can be really powerful and shift the outcomes.
Exactly. And there is so much trauma that has been or could be built up from, like you said, a lifetime of trauma. It's not just trauma from possibly your previous birth, but like things that I personally didn't realize would come up and came from is like childhood traumas that I experienced, which created this sense of not feeling worthy, not feeling like I had a choice, not feeling like I could speak up for myself, because so much of my childhood, I felt like nobody ever paid attention to me. Nothing I said ever mattered. I was just kind of pushed to the side. So that translated personally into when I went to the doctor said, "This is best for you." And I said, "Okay." Because for so long I didn't realize I could make my own choice and I had that voice. So realizing that too, like some things will and could creep up on you in your birth if you aren't like going into yourself and just remembering to come into your body and remind yourself to be in that present moment and make sure that you can feel safe or have the tools so that you can remember that you are safe.
Yeah. And that's another reason to have a doula, because the research points toward having a doula as the number one factor in preventing the cascade of interventions. They're there to advocate and facilitate on your behalf when you're in the thick of it. And to point out, this is what's happening. This is your birth vision. What do you want to do? And so that's a really important layer of, I would say, protection when we're encountering that power differential with doctors and providers. So having a doula can be the best law for you.
Exactly. And one way that I try to describe myself as a doula is I am going to be the most unbiased person in the room. So, of course, I have built this relationship with my client and her partner, if she has one. And I've gotten to know them during our journey. So I know what they do and do not want. So you're right. I can speak up for them if they want that to be my role, or I can help slow things down by saying, "Hey, I think they want a minute to talk about this," or "I know they want to pray about this before we move forward." And I'm also, I describe it, I'm unbiased because I'm not connected to the hospital. The hospital's not paying me. I don't have to follow their policies, their regulations. So that's one way, I feel like a huge way that a doula can help, because they can help slow down the situation so that there's more time to think and decide. And I'm not tied to the hospital, so they don't have to worry about me trying to rush them on the hospital schedule. So yes, I think you brought up an amazing point. And even if somebody doesn't feel comfortable with having a doula present, there's also options for, having like a virtual doula or a family member that is versed in how you want to be treated or how you want to take different situations happening can help so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that advocacy, however it manifests, is really important to the process.
Absolutely. So, we've talked about so much, but one thing that, I kind of wanted to talk about and we kind of touched on was like the historical implications in modern day complications of like cesarean based on your research and, all that good stuff.
And the way that gynecology and obstetrics came to be with tools that we're familiar with, like the speculum, is pretty graphic and violent. And with that is Dr. Marion Sims practicing on enslaved women up to 30 times procedures without any consent. And there's scholars still arguing today, well, they got free health care, which hurts my heart and soul, because it was really violent. And one of the things I came across, even, and this is not Marion Sims, but just another fact, is the modern chainsaw that we use for lumber was actually invented as something for birth, for sawing through the pubic symphysis. So there's a lot of violence. And in the resource, like the global north and what we call the west, there was a lot of Roman law where a mother and a fetus couldn't be buried together. So they were always trying to save the fetus and not the woman until some colonizers went to Uganda in the 1500s and witnessed cesarean births where both the mother and the child survived because they were using local plants, botanicals, to prevent infection. We know that C-section, even in modern times, 20 times higher rate of infection than vaginal delivery. So they witnessed that, and that's when things kind of began to shift. And then in the West, they were also starting to use animal husbandry techniques. So it comes out of quite a bit of violence, and then how it's showing up today is through institutionalized racism in our hospital settings. When we know that Black women are dying at 3 to 4 times the rate as white women in the United States still today during childbirth. And so for me, that's part of my social justice efforts and why I teach my research and talk to anybody I can about it in terms of other providers so that we can prevent the morbidity and mortality amongst people who identify as BIPOC. So that comes from the history, and it's hard to talk about. There is a place in Alabama now, I think at the University of Alabama, where they have a monument to Betsy and Anarcha and Lucy, some of the women that were practiced on by Marion Sims. So we're starting to have a different relationship and honor those women rather than him, which I find really beautiful. But I think it's important for us to know some of that history and why we still have this major issue in our healthcare system with Black women, especially dying during childbirth.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh. And I don't think everybody realizes like you talked about like the chainsaw, how that was actually created to cut women's pubic bones in child. Like it's just so wild. Like I'm so happy that you touched on that, and I think it's important everything else that you talked about, to know about the racism, to know about the mortality rates, because we can't stay in the dark about this. And you talking about it to anybody who will listen is such an amazing step towards creating, people, more people knowing about these issues so that we can move forward with trying to help them, trying to fix them. Obviously, this has been created over hundreds of years and it's not going to be fixed overnight, but I think the more people that know about it, we can all take little baby steps forward and it can help. And, little baby steps, obviously, those lead up and create big leaps and bounds over time into creating a safer space where, Black women don't feel like they're going to die if they birth in the hospital, because I've heard that. Like they're scared to give birth in the hospital because they think they're going to be killed by this maternal system that we have right now. So thank you so much for doing all that work and letting people know about the history that they might not have known about yet.
Yeah, and to add on to that, it's 3 to 4 times the rate throughout the US, but in New York City, Black women are dying at 12 times the rate. And we're seeing that the most highly educated Black woman has the same chance of survival as the least educated white woman. And that's why we've seen some of our amazing researchers even die after childbirth. And then you look at other people like Beyonce or Serena Williams, who had really adverse reactions, who know their bodies so well, have the best teams in the world because they have all this money, but still almost died. And so we really need to call attention to that and make a big change within our healthcare systems, starting from the bottom. And so having the doulas there, and I think it's really important to empower all people so that everybody can feel safe when giving birth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for talking about that, because it's so important that we just get this message out there so more people can realize what is happening in the world. I would love to give people a way that they can come into contact with you, or, so that they can work with you. So what would be the best way that they can go about that?
Sure. So I have many Instagrams. My practice, and I can send these to you as well, is Neski underscore Cairo. So it's my last name. But I also have Dr. underscore Elizabeth underscore Wisneski. And I am in Ventura in Santa Barbara, California. But I also do virtual sessions, and they can schedule that through my webpage. And right now, my webpage, it's going to change to my name soon, but right now it's dresb.com. So it's just dresb.com. So there's ways for people to schedule with me virtually as well, where we can talk about your birth story and experience and process some of that trauma so you're not holding on and recapitulating it, or to do more general life coaching with me as well. That's, it's rooted in somatics and the body and the lived experience.
Absolutely. Oh, that's incredible. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on to this podcast and speaking so many truths to people and giving so much beautiful advice to women who are planning a repeat cesarean or are planning a VBAC. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. I'm so grateful to be here today.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the VBAC Junkie podcast. Make sure to leave a rating and subscribe to the show so that you don't miss an episode. And also, I have a free gift for you. If you would like to have a guide on how to prepare for a VBAC, head to my website at www.birthingcometrue.com/VBAC guide. And all of this will be in the show notes, so you can just click that link and head there and download this free guide. I hope you have an amazing week. Until next time, bye.